In a very short time, we've been forced to reevaluate our values. Values related to employment, family, and home. As we come out of two history-making pandemic years, connecting with others is more important than ever. But it's safe to say that the way we can and want to connect has changed. We are not-for-profit professionals supporting adults to live, work, and grow in a rapidly changing world. Connection means that we need to work together to build and put into practice whole and multifaceted plans for our clients so that they can reach their own personal successes. For some of us, life is returning to pre-pandemic norms, where we work out of an office on a set schedule. Others may have no office to return to and may spend working hours on a couch or kitchen table in their own home. And some may be straddling schedules where they sometimes go to the office and sometimes work in their own personal space. These experiences are the same for our clients who are navigating a world that is still deciding what work-life will look like. How can we support them while adapting ourselves? Whoever and wherever you are, if you support adults in learning and life, the Getting Connected podcast may be for you. Join us as we talk through relevant topics that support you to do your best work. Grab a coffee, give us just a few minutes of your workday, and let's connect.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Getting Connected. I am podcasting on my own today as my colleague, the effervescent and always effective Ashley Hoth-Murray is a little under the weather. So it is my pleasure to carry on myself today with our very special guest, Neil Cosby. I'll be telling you more about Neil in a couple of minutes. Just a reminder that our Getting Connected podcast is now nearly 2 years old. Literacy Link Niagara began this series as a bit of an experiment to see if it might be a little different way of us communicating subjects and topics of interest to the literacy and basic skills field as a whole across the province of Ontario. And what we've learned is that our topics and our fabulous guests have actually had a great traction, not just across Ontario, but across Canada. And we also have a number of people in Europe who join us on a regular basis. So we're really excited that we're really reaching a lot of people and communicating with a much broader audience than we initially ever expected to. So moving on today with our very special guest, I would like to introduce you to Neil Cosby. I'm going to have Neil say hello in just a moment. I just wanted you to know a little bit about Neil. He is a professional colleague of mine. I have met him in the community. We have worked together on a number of projects, and he's a seasoned human resources professional. He serves as senior executive human resources consultant with HR Covered. HR Covered is a very diverse, multidimensional, one-stop shop for human resources needs, and you should check them out because I am referring a lot of people to this particular organization because of their diverse approaches. Neil's background includes a lot around infrastructure and systems for organizations, both corporate and not-for-profit, in terms of operating effective human resources systems and mechanics for their organization. It's all about structure, right, Neil?
You got it.
So things like compliance, recruitment, training, development, health and safety, big one, obviously, after and as we emerge from COVID and move into whatever else other health challenges may face us in the future, things like labor and employee relations and performance management, something certainly I'm not sure it's done that well in the not-for-profit sector, since tends to be an area. So Neil not only has a lot of good, sensible and professional experience with corporations, his roots really are 12 years that he spent in social services. He's worked with marginalized populations, including the homeless, people struggling with mental health, addictions, LGBTQT and other diverse populations. So he knows what it's like to run a small community-based agency. And so we're going to be drawing on his many, many years of experience. And I have a few questions for Neil. But before we go any further, I will say hello to Neil and give him a chance to say hello to our audience.
Well, thank you, Gay. Excuse me. Thank you, Gay. That was an amazing introduction. So thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be able to speak to your audience. And hopefully there's a few nuggets here that they take. And again, just very happy to be on the show for sure. So,
well, we're glad you could join us. I think that it's really timely, and I've got a few questions I'm going to ask you. And we know how these conversations go. They do lead to a lot of other questions and discussions. Mm-hmm. But in terms of sort of framing the context for the reason we reached out to Neil, we know that the world of work has changed for everyone. And post-pandemic, really understanding what that has meant to the world of work and the world of managing other people, I think is going to be of extreme importance as we move forward. So my first question to Neil is a very open one and a very personal as well as professional question. And my question is, Neil, as a human resources professional, what has the pandemic taught you?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And, you know, I start off with the resilience of people. While we had a few negative things throughout the pandemic and in the post-pandemic, what I refer to as the pandemic hangover, I think we need to recognize people were resilient through this. I mean, it was unprecedented, and I don't want to get into a lot of COVID and pandemic cliches, but that's the truth of it. This was unprecedented. We had never faced anything like this in our lifetime before. So it was very scary at the beginning. But if you look at how people really flip to, okay, we can't go into work, we got to work remote. Okay, we got to get that set up. So organizations and their business continuity, they were innovative, they were creative. And again, to borrow the COVID cliches, they were very agile in how they were able to deliver services or, you know, keep their assembly lines going. And in the social services field, they found very interesting and unique ways to make sure that clients and those marginalized people that you referred to in my bio were still being adhered to. So the positive of it is the resilience. I think that the acknowledgement of mental health issues in the workplace really came to the forefront in this, and that is continuing post-pandemic. Employees, I think we're not allowed to let employers off the hook, and I don't think they really needed to, because employers were ready to continue on with this. They recognize that this isn't just a situational thing. This is an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. I think leadership styles came under the microscope. And although there's an acknowledgement, of course, that this was unprecedented, it was still made organizations look to see how did our leadership function effectively? What changes do we need to make? And there's certainly been that that focus moving forward. I'll just make a couple other comments and then I'll stop because I could keep on talking. But post-pandemic, I mean, there's a lot of things with remote work in the sense of not just working at home, but now people want to work on a beach somewhere. Recruitment has become tough and challenging. Now, I'm not convinced all of this is related to COVID. We've had other things happen in the world, the Ukraine war, things like that, that are all contributing to these different things that we're seeing. But people do have a sense of, if I'm going to work, I want it to be mean something to me, and I want it to be gratifying. And I not only want to contribute to the company, but it needs to mean something to me. it's a two-way street here. And I hope all that makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, it does. It does. In particular, I must agree with all of the comments you've made. And I think that the difference around how employees now have certain expectations of their employers, and people are in a much better position to be able to negotiate with employers. And something else you said that I'd like to get back to related to that is the fact that leaders have also been under the microscope, and that they may have recognized that their old leadership style is no longer working with the different expectations that their workforce now has. So maybe you could talk a little more about what employees, the change that has happened, and what employees today are looking for in a job. So if I'm seeking a job, or I'm returning to a job, or continuing in a job in this new environment, what are my expectations of my employer, and how has that changed?
I think employees are looking for a lot more flexibility in how they work, when they work, and where they work. And I think recently, because of the inflationary components that are under there, they are looking for increased pay now. So it's kind of a tsunami of things that are happening and impacting the workplace. And I think that, not all employers can provide that. It's all dependent on their resources. And I think employers are trying to be as reasonable as possible in accommodating or providing some of these avenues for people to continue working, whether it be, I've had things from clients telling me their employees want to go work on a beach for a month. What do we need to have to put in place? And is that feasible? And at the end of the day, if the person is able to still deliver at what they should be, or even above, then it's a win-win for everybody else. There needs to be strongly communicated between both parties. You use the word expectations. This is what we expect from you if you're not just working remotely at home, but on a beach, or if you've decided
or
to...
Or in the office.
Travel. It is really, for me, not much of a segue. We always had performance expectations, so if they can do it and they're happy in their environment and they're where they're doing it, then I think it's something that employers need to look at. But again, it has to be a two-way street. If the employer feels that the resources aren't there for them to do it, then of course that's a decision they have to make, and that's a decision they have to communicate to the employee. And maybe that won't work for the employee, and they'll seek work elsewhere. So it's a hodgepodge of things, Gay. There is just, as an employer, you're dealing with a lot of things, and attraction and retention, and how much do you offer to attract and retain people? It's a real struggle. I think that this will continue for a year or two, even in the apparent upcoming recession. I still think it's going to be a so-called employees market for the time.
Right. And of course, I think this is part of a transition, right? I think we're just in the midst. I think maybe that COVID and the challenges of working around restrictions has begun the change, but it feels like we're still in transition.
Absolutely. I mean, no one was predicting what could have happened once we started emerging from COVID. I remember in the early days, they said, oh, the economy is just going to take off and be booming. People will have been so pent up and saved so much money. And that's not to say that hasn't happened. People are traveling a lot more. They are spending a lot more money. But no one, I think, realized what was going to happen within the workplace. The move to not being in an office, it has been absolutely profound. And and there have been, of course, some cases where employees have been asked to come back and they've said, I feel I'm more productive in my home office or wherever they're working remotely, I want to continue it. And maybe the employer is okay with it, and maybe they're not. You really have to look at the pros and cons and the balances. A lot of people talk about maintaining culture or maintaining camaraderie. Personally, I think you can still do that with a remote work environment. I use my own company as an example. We are all remote, and our culture and camaraderie is second to none. You have to have that constant communication, those constant check-ins, those meetings to establish it. And I would say it can be done if it's done properly. It doesn't mean lowering your expectations either. I don't guide companies to do that. It's whatever your expectations are, you stick with them and make sure and check in that they're delivering.
I recently read a really interesting article written by Emily Schmidt, and I did share it with a number of people. And Neil, I'm not sure if I shared it with you, but it was answering a question. She works for a small company that does a lot of research around workplace and workforce culture. I will share that with you after this meeting. But we found it fascinating at Literacy Link, and we did share it widely throughout our Literacy and Basic Skills Network, because the question she was attempting to answer was, what's the most successful workforce look like? Is it in person, or is it virtual? And what organizations can actually deliver more effectively virtually? And which types of organizations need to be face-to-face? And at the end of the day, her research indicated a final conclusion, which was that more than anything, employees, and job seekers are really intent on finding the culture that works, in which the issue of in-person or virtual is part of the mix. But what's most important is that they see a link between their own values and the organizational values of the organizations for which they work. Have you got any comments on organizational values? I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And more we're seeing that. And I've always said, even before the pandemic, nobody wants to work for a quote, crappy company or a garbage company. They don't want to work for somebody where their values are compromised, where their ethics are compromised. And more we are seeing that employees want to work with companies that have things like corporate social responsibility that are not in the news for things that are not positive. So, and they want to work for a company that treats their employees well, treats their employee in a reasonable manner, protects their employees. And, you alluded to the compliance pieces in HR, and everybody kind of, you know, some people have the stereotype, it's all about HR coming down and saying, no, no, no. And it's beyond that. But the bigger piece is that when you don't have a compliant workforce, or sorry, a compliant employer, that's when you can get into people not feeling safe. And I like to think that when, you know, we are ensuring compliance, that is a part of it, that when people say, I feel safe because I know my employer, if something happens, will address it right away, take the appropriate actions. They've communicated to me, whether it be in policies, whether it be in training, that this is the process for X, this is the process for Y. If you feel something is going on and you need to report it, here is the process. We take all of these seriously. So, you know, it's values of acting with integrity as an organization, acting with integrity towards employees, acting with integrity with customers, clients, patients, whatever the term is for the people that you serve. And the research shows, and you know, I'm sure you know this, Gay, people that work for companies that have a higher moral rating are happier.
Yes, yes. The true purpose, from my point of view, Neil, when we talk about integrity, is we say what we do,
yeah,
what we deliver.
Mm-hmm.
It's that red thread that runs through everything we do. And I don't think we can underestimate the importance of a value-based, purpose-driven organization. Yeah. Whether you're selling widgets or you're delivering literacy and basic skills programs, it's that integrity creates a safe nest for yes. workers, right?
I have two quotes that I always remember. One is, act not just in the workplace, but as a human being, like your kid is on your shoulder watching you. And the other is, act the same way. Sorry, I'm just trying to remember that. Act the same way when people aren't around as you would if people were around, which means,
right.
You know, if there's an opportunity to get away with something, are you going to do it? Because all those factors are at play.
When you can.
Yeah.
And how many times have we done that and it's not ended up so great? So always err on positive.
Exactly.
Positive. Exactly. Now, you mentioned about compliance, and when we think of compliance, we're not just talking about compliance with local or internal policy, HR policy, or internal regulations. We're also talking about, I think that's your primary focus, that you were talking about the legislation. So just for the province of Ontario, as an example, is it difficult or tricky to try and keep up with changing legislation?
Not when you've got, an HR consultant like myself or an HR covered company. I mean, for businesses and especially not-for-profits, small businesses where the HR component, maybe, and I'm not criticizing, maybe a bit of an afterthought. There's other things that they're concerned about. Some of these places are concerned about day-to-day survival. Or maybe they have a person whose job it is to oversee HR, but again, it's a part of their job. So there has been a hell of a lot of legislative changes come in related to COVID and not even related to COVID. And I know for HR covered, we are continually sending out updates to our clients because there has been so much. And we operate on a national scale. We cover every province. And we also work with federally regulated employees. Today, for example, as of December 1st, federally regulated employees will now have 10 sick days. Oh. And so that's going to be a change. This fall, there was legislation around disconnecting from work. We live in a very technological age where we could reach out to an employee on our cell phones and text them. Do they have to respond to that after so-called working hours? And, there was legislation around that. There was legislation around the use of electronic monitoring in employees. And how do you let them know? And is it appropriate for that to be happening? There was even legislation around the use of, I'm sure some people may be familiar that we have an opioid epidemic right now in our communities. Some sectors are now charged with having Naloxone on site in case one of their employees has an opioid overdose. And it's very broad language in that you either know or ought to have known that there was a chance somebody in your workforce could have an opioid overdose. It's very tricky to navigate. For sure.
No, that might also apply to whether their clients or customers might also have an episode, right?
It could, absolutely.
So it's really a health and safety issue, not just for staff, but for customers or clients. That's really interesting. So I think to summarize, what I'm hearing is depending on where you live and what sector you're in.
Mm-hmm.
The legislation is changing all the time, and it's going to be challenging for any small business, large business, or not-for-profit organization to stay on top likely, unless there are some places like it. Do you send out that kind of information generally to people?
Yes, to clients and maybe prospective clients. And if anybody requests, can I get on that mailing list? We're happy to provide.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah. Just so you know, Neil, and our audience knows, is when we do send out the link to this podcast, we always provide some additional information or resources, anything that we may have referred to throughout our conversation. So we'll make sure that we include some links, and I'll even include the link to that article that I must rave about. Now, here in Niagara, we have a lady, her name is Karen Schmidt. And everyone in Niagara, and Neil is nodding as well, everyone in Niagara knows Karen, because Karen knows everyone in Niagara. Karen is a master networker and matchmaker. So this article that I referenced about the importance of organizational culture was written by her daughter. Mm-hmm. So no bias at all, because if this had come across to me any other way, I would have been flagging it for people. So we'll also include a link to that article. It's good reflection, not just for job seekers to ask maybe some of their best questions when they're looking for work, but also as employers to reflect on, if we want to respond to get the best people in the jobs here, we need to accommodate to a degree while still being compliant to the needs and what people are asking for. When I hear that people are having a hard time hiring, I often wonder if perhaps there are barriers there that they may not be aware of. I know that there's also a general sense that mm-hmm. it's hard for people to find workers right now. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, and that's a very interesting one. And I mean, you have some people have the opinion that nobody wants to work. Maybe that's true in a few cases, but really everybody needs to work for a living. And then you have the philosophy that young people particularly want to run before they can walk, meaning they want the higher positions and the loftier salaries. And then on the employee side, they're just looking to be, as I said, those things around flexibility, autonomy, being, you know, working for an employer that's integral. With the so-called freelance market, and it goes by many names, there's freelance, there's independent contractor. These are folks that have decided they don't want to be tied to any one company. They don't want to be tied to working full-time 40 hours for a year. They want to work when they want to work, where they want to work. And that segment of the population is growing and increasing. And we, you know, as employers, we can either say, oh, we can criticize it, or we can try to work with it. And we can try to use things to entice people to, hey, don't be a freelancer just for me for a few weeks. How about a little bit longer? You know, HR, I can sum up HR in four statements. It's about finding the right people at the right place, at the right time, with the right resources. And that is what we do from everything from compliance, recruitment, to leadership development, to organizational development. And we as HR professionals are getting better at seeing the twists, the changes, and being able to provide that guidance so that we can get the right human, it's kind of a term I like but don't like, get the right human capital in our organizations that are gonna push our goals and objectives forward. If you can create a culture where the loyalty and the employee is raving so much about their employer that word of mouth is helping you fill your open positions, you've done a damn good job.
Well put, Neil. I think that might be a great place for us to end our conversation today and to wrap things up. I want to thank Neil Cosby from HR Covered for sharing his many, many years and experiences with dozens, I would say by now, right, Neil? Dozens and dozens
Yeah, it's a pretty big list. And I'm proud to have worked with all the organizations. And for me, it's not just about they're a client and I got to do this work. I get right into what they do. Whenever I'm talking to people and we're talking about things we're going to do, I use the term we, and it is the collective we, because I like to f I want them to know that I'm a part of wanting to contribute to their success. So,
Great.
as do all
Amen.
our other consultants. So,
Super. Well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your perspective with us today. And I'm going to say thank you for our audience who joined us today. And remember that you can replay any of our podcasts. We'll put a link in the message that goes out with the link to this new podcast. So please join us next time when once again we get connected.
thank you, Gay, and it was a pleasure being a guest on your show.
Thanks.